Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
You've created a cool indoor retreat. Now let Mountain Air Comfort Systems provide the quiet and energy-efficient comfort you can depend on with a range of innovative cooling solutions like the Carrier Infinity Heat Pump that delivers premium home heating and cooling performance. Learn more at mountainairmobile.com. You make it a home. Let Mountain Air Comfort Systems make it more comfortable. Rebates, incentives, and financing are available for a limited time. Mountain Air Comfort Systems and Carrier. Turn to the experts.
Welcome to the Lorehounds Spring 2024 Star Wars Catch-Up Podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Alicia. And today we're going to put the Bad and Batch and the Tales into the Empire as we get into the 2 latest Star Wars animated series.
With the help of our guest, everyone's favorite Tolkien scholar, Marilyn R. Pukila, we'll start off with our spoiler-free hot takes. And then after the break, it's time to unleash the spoilers for a deeper dive into these 2 shows.
We want to hear your Star Wars thoughts and feedback about these shows or anything else. You can email us at starwars@thelorehounds.com or head over to the contact page on the website and use the form to record us a voicemail that we can drop right into the podcast. We'd also love for you to join us on Discord for chats about Star Wars and all the other things we're covering. Link in the show notes.
Support the community on Supercast or Patreon. Join the conversation on Discord and take a listen to our affiliate podcast. Links for everything in the show notes.
We like those show note links.
We do. We're working on, we were just discussing, we need a link tree. We need a regular link that sends you to like a hub because we now have, I think, 6 other affiliate feeds.
Yeah.
And it's just becoming unruly. So we want to make it more readable.
No, I was saying now I'm using the Lorehounds website as a link tree for the moment. Because at least at the top there, you can click on all the different podcasts and just get their feeds.
I didn't even think about that, but that's a good idea.
I am relying upon the grace of John and or David, depending upon who's the people in my, show notes. My little show notes every week.
Fair enough. So, Alicia, this is your first podcast as a full-fledged Lorehound, as a knighted,
huzzah!
A knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Do I look different?
You have this sort of halo glow around your head. You
know, I see a glow. I see a general glow. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The armor on your shoulder. Yeah.
The armor really gives the podcast a different vibe. But
well, I mean, I know you have to edit it out in post, and I'm sorry for that, but it just felt necessary.
It's true. It's true. All right, so why don't you start us off on your hot takes as your honorary new Lorehound?
So we have 2 things we're covering today, starting off with the Bad Batch. We got that 15-episode season, which is like a nice, meaty episode length for these days. But I have to admit, I was more into the first half, personally. It got a little slow for me in the back half, and that might also have to do with the fact that I was watching it back-to-back with the X-Men 97 episodes, because they were released on the same day. And the X-Men 97 episodes are going at breakneck speed. So by contrast, I really was so excited about the locations and stuff for this season. But then it felt like we were repeating storylines a little bit, but we got some good character arcs, especially Crosshairs, and yeah, I'm it ended in a satisfying place. So I hope we'll get to see these characters again. Even if, you know, I kind of knew where it was going to end because of knowing Star Wars lore.
Right.
I really loved Tales of the Empire, maybe even more than Tales of the Jedi. Maybe I have a villain thing, I don't know. But it was two characters, Morgan Elsbeth and Barriss Offee specifically, that I wanted to know more about. So, and it was just like dropped in our laps as a sudden surprise. So it was delightful in that way. And we got like two journeys into the darkness and how their paths forked. And the Morgan story is like, now I really want to go back and watch Ahsoka because that's so enhanced by what we learned from about Morgan. My only complaint is that the episodes are too short. I need more. What about you, Marilyn? What did you think overall?
I enjoyed it, although I do feel that this third season was a lot darker emotionally and unfortunately often visually. I mean, I learned about how to increase my iPad to its full brightness and I still couldn't see a lot of what was going on.
And you weren't even with us for Game of Thrones season 8.
No. And there was one episode I almost found triggering, the isolation of the children. And well, no more. This is not spoiler territory yet. And it's kind of funny, when I was getting ready to do this outside of Omega's arc, I kind of had a hard time remembering a lot of details from the first half. So we're kind of flipped in that way, I guess, Alicia. It's interesting. And in terms of the length, it did seem to me that on more than one occasion, they took what I would consider to be an entire episode and they split it into two, which were unsatisfactorily short. And then the last episode was almost twice as long as some of the others. So I really don't understand what they were thinking about when they were splitting it up into episodes. And so I think, as you also observed, the pacing was odd. Visually, except for the darkness, visually it was beautiful. And the music, I almost never noticed the music in these kinds of things, but I noticed the music this time, and particularly the final episode. I believe I characterized it as Wagnerian in Discord somewhere. I thought they did a really good job with that. And I kind of see this as having woven a lot of threads and pulled in a lot of threads and doing their best to kind of smooth the link between some of the things that the sequel film trilogy did with, you know, the things that came before it. So one could ask, did they do that successfully or not? And of course, the answer will vary depending upon who you are and what your feelings are about all these different versions of stories. As far as Tales of the Empire was concerned, it was an interesting choice to take two characters and contrast them that way. But I'm not sure but what it did a disservice to either one or the other of them, depending upon your preferences for the character. It kind of highlighted my initial feelings about one of them. So I don't know. It's an interesting choice at any rate.
Did you watch Tales of the Jedi?
I did. I did. Yes.
Because they did the same thing. It was this contrast between two Jedi.
Yeah. But for some reason, it didn't do anything to the characters one way or the other. I mean, in terms of, you know,
maybe these two are more parallel.
Well, they're parallel in one respect, but in another respect, as you said, they fork. I mean, they're paths entirely, which is a nice contrast in itself. But, I'll save it for when I can do.
Spoilers. I mean, so do the characters in Tales of the Jedi, right? They both leave the Jedi Order, but one goes in one direction and one goes in the other.
Yes, but they both seemed complete personages, complete characters in themselves.
Sure. Well, you didn't
because they had more change over the time of the episodes that we saw.
Did you see the Barriss episodes of the Clone Wars?
I saw the ones where she appeared in the Ahsoka arc.
Yeah, so that's there's like two arcs where she mostly shows up. One is earlier on where she and Ahsoka sort of escape this bad situation where their masters can't get to them. And then the other one is, you know, the framing that we talked about in the Ahsoka Prep podcast.
Right.
But I mean, Barriss was always an unsatisfying end to me because you're like, what happened to her?
Yes.
After Order 66. And I'm really glad that we finally got something on that.
Yes. Yes. I am too. And it raised a question in my mind, which is, how do you distinguish between member berries or fan service or filling in the gaps? Yeah. There's a lot of talk on the Discord about, oh, that was just all fan service. I was bored. Or why do they keep using the same sounds over and over? And
I mean, sounds.
Why not? Yeah. That's another podcast, I suppose. But it seems to me that if you look at it from a technology standpoint, why are they going to make different sounds until they have entirely different systems, you know, right. or a new source of fuel or, you know, whatever it happens to be. Goodness knows, they come up with all kinds of shapes of ships.
Well, Bob, I was just talking about lightsabers with him on the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast. Mm-hmm. So he's blind. So he didn't realize at first that the darksaber, when he first saw it in Clone Wars, because Clone Wars didn't have good audio description at the time, he knew it was something different because it made a different sound.
Sure.
And so in that case, they do it. Yeah.
Sure. But it's a different device, isn't it? You would expect something that looks so wildly different from your traditional lightsaber to sound different because it is.
Exactly.
But the lightsaber is a lightsaber is a lightsaber until they invent a different type. Mm-hmm. And, you know, pew-pews are pew-pews, right?
I mean,
they're not supposed to have any sound, of course, in space, but that's another thing altogether. So, John, what do you have to tell us?
Well, I already kind of gave my thoughts on Tales of the Jedi with our banter, but Tales of the Empire, rather. I really enjoyed Tales of the Empire. Definitely liked the Barriss episodes more than the Morgan episodes, which I know, Alicia, you're going to push back on. That's cool.
I'm with you, John. I am with you on that.
Yeah. Okay.
But I thought it did well. My one complaint about it is it felt like they held something back to do in a follow-up. And I just wish they would have done a complete character arc, especially for Barriss. I didn't feel like that was complete.
Interesting.
And the Bad Batch, I mean, some of the best storytelling in Star Wars recently. Mm. And I know a lot of people are not super into the animated series. They're like, oh, watch the live action stuff, but I don't want the animated stuff. You're missing out. You're really missing out.
Definitely.
This was better than anything in The Mandalorian, in Ahsoka. Hopefully the Acolyte is great. Oh, this is much better than Ahsoka. Don't get me started on that. But
well,
it was really satisfying, you know?
You don't like a leap of faith?
Yeah.
Or trust or whatever.
Oh boy. Don't even get me started. But I thought it was much better. And really, we are right in the midst of the sequel trilogy really rehabilitation effort. Mm-hmm. And I thought it did a pretty good job of doing that.
Yeah.
Which is shocking because for me, I mean, the sequel era, I have a lot of mixed feelings on because I loved the second movie in the sequel era, but the third movie, I walked out of the theater and I was like, what the hell was that? And I think like a lot of people were just like, what, why any of that? But they're actually making the somehow Palpatine returned a little better.
You could hardly make it worse, but
I mean, I think that their biggest mistake, not to relitigate the sequels here, but I think their biggest mistake was they announced Palpatine's return in, wasn't it like a Fortnite event? Which
did they?
Yeah, so great for those people. Yeah, before the last film released. So
I thought
great.
It was just his laugh in a trailer.
I don't play Fortnite, so I'm not completely sure what happened, but that's what I remember at the time. That's what had people so upset. And I was also like, but I am also a Reylo. I'm coming out as a Reylo.
Well, you know, this is part of the challenge of having a universe, which is depicted to us in so many different formats.
And from different creators, right?
And from different creators, even more so. And so those who feel that it is not appropriate to have Star Wars canon in a video game would presumably have been particularly annoyed if they had even known about that particular introduction, because presumably if they don't like that, then they just don't even go into that universe. But my
introduction, tell them that we now have two canon video games.
More, my introduction to the more, concept was you know, the trailer going off into the infinity thing, and I'm like, oh, really? Paucity of imagination, folks. I remember feeling exactly the same way in what I consider to be the third movie, i.e. Return of the Jedi, sitting in the theater in Wales, actually, with an American friend there, and the trailer came up and we saw, you know, a second Death Star, and we both groaned in almost exactly the same way.
Yeah, it's fair.
Like, really? I was expecting more of Lucas's incredible imagination with, you know, planet worms leaping out at spaceships and, you know, all these totally in like a second, you know.
But we got
on reflection, it makes sense. It makes sense. Okay. Why wouldn't they make another one? Yeah. You know, they've got all the plans still.
Right.
So.
Well, my biggest problem with episode 9 is that I think they should have, when Carrie Fisher passed away, they should have just let her pass away in the second film, and just trying to force her into that final film with like these awkward, you know, clips that they happen to have of her, for me, that was, and also of course the sidelining of Finn and Rose was also a major problem. Those are my biggest problems.
Well, we're litigating the sequel.
We're going too deep.
Yeah, you're sorry. Yeah, going too deep. But anyway, yeah. So Bad Batch, if people really want to know about the somehow Palpatine return, Bad Batch is a campaign in the redemption arc of that storyline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there are some great twists and turns in Bad Batch. There was one plot point this season that made me groan a little bit, but mostly I was really impressed with the writing. I thought that they did not take cheap shots. The character arcs felt really full and earned, especially with people like Crosshair.
Yeah. Mm.
And I'm just so satisfied with the season. Also, as you alluded to, Marilyn, the visuals are stunning. They're absolutely stunning. And it's amazing how much better Star Wars animation has gotten. I've always been a complainer about 3D animation. I've been like, you know what? Bring back hand-drawn animation. It looks so much better. They're getting to a pretty good point with 3D now.
I don't even know the difference between those two things. So I don't know if, for the sake of anyone listening who doesn't know, you want to explain.
No, I just mean like the classic, you know, Disney animation. You know, you're watching Snow White, that's hand-drawn. Mm-hmm. But compared to this, which is computer-generated. Yeah.
But they've been doing something in modern times that I really love, where they make 3D look 2D, and that adds, so it's
I've seen that.
I mean, and I would say to a certain extent, they do it with like the backgrounds, for instance, in the Bad Batch. Mm-hmm. And so the backgrounds of the Bad Batch look like paintings. And that for me, that's, I want to hang them all as posters on my wall.
Yes. The backgrounds to me are the best. The motion of characters is still awkward. And I'll say that animated has never really reached me all that well. It just, you know, I equated it with cartoons, which of course it's not the same thing. Of course it isn't.
Right.
But I'm slowly having to, you know, say, okay, there they go with an animated walk. Let's just look at the pretty background and wait until we don't see them walking and it'll be fine. So I know I'm mostly drawn in by the story, and the fact that I am drawn in enough that I can mostly overlook the things that jar me out of it says how good the story is.
Well, for those of us who have been playing video games for most of our lives,
exactly,
we are not bothered by awkward character movements and mouths not moving when they should. We're just like, this is much better than what we had.
Exactly. That's what
it is. My sum total of video game experience, I remember the King's game way back when. I remember it was like Sim Planet, where you had a whole planet and you were supposed to build it up, and eventually you won if you got a sentient race that could blast off into space and bugged them. That's it. Most of which probably nobody has ever heard of.
I haven't.
Nope.
Well, we'll talk sometime.
Shall we take a quick break, and then we will head right into the full spoiler review of these two shows?
Sounds good.
Awesome.
Saving money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP lawn and garden and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big money at Menards.
And we're back. Alicia, you did the outline for this. So I'm going to pass it to you in a second to lead us through. But I just want to give a quick spoiler warning for everyone. We're going to discuss everything that's ever happened in Star Wars. If you don't want to be spoiled for things, or if you want to learn more about it, head to the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast. Link in the show notes.
It's superb.
Oh, thank you.
For now, stick around if you want to know what happened or if you already watched it. Alicia, take it away.
I mean, I thought, and of course we, Marilyn's contributed a lot to the notes as well, but I thought overall we could just touch on, starting with the Bad Batch season 3, touch on the main character arcs and some other points, starting with, of course, our girl Omega.
Yeah.
This is really her coming of age story more than anything else, I would say. So we got the news about her high M count, many midichlorians. Were you guys at all surprised by this? What do you think it means? Do you think she was engineered that way on purpose? What do you think, Marilyn?
How much is M count biological and spiritual, and how much is it able to be engineered? I really am left with more questions than answers about Omega along those lines and one or two others, because you know, it's hinted that she's really strong in midichlorians and so therefore strong in the Force. And then we get Ventress coming in and trying to test her. And oh, no, she's really low. But then later saying, oh, actually, no, she's got it really high. So what are we supposed to take away?
I thought when Ventress said that, I didn't think that she meant it. I thought Ventress was kind of protecting Omega in a way, because she knows if she gets labeled as, you know, being Force sensitive, that changes her life.
But she told somebody actually she has a very high count.
Yeah. Well, yeah, apparently she has a high blood count, but then does that mean she's Force sensitive? I've always thought that Omega was, though, because she does. There's just been several subtle things that have happened throughout the three seasons where she just seems to have extra awareness of her surroundings, obviously connection with animals. But
Betcha.
Yeah, I was always betcha.
well, one thing that I found really interesting, the very first or second episode, when she and the guys are all in the cell together the first time, she seems to be imprinting on them. They make a point of showing her taking on the postures that the other guys are taking on and just really, really listening very closely and tracking. And that's the first time we see pulling a tile off the wall and crawling in between the walls to escape. So we come full circle in the end with that particular technique. I just don't feel like I know enough about what it means for her to be a clone. Why she was made. I mean, if the whole thing about aging, she seems to be aging in human terms quite at a normal pace.
No, yeah. Her aging is more like Boba Fett's, just normal aging.
Yeah. And of course, you've discussed on other podcasts the whole question of genetic sex characteristics and, you know, how do you clone two females out of a male donor. I mean, maybe that was the core of Nala Se's experiments, which she was trying to do just that.
Yeah, and I'm not going to try to make sense of Star Wars biology. I think we're just going to have to take them out of their words. It's the same thing as Westeros biology, right? It's like the seed is strong. They have black hair, so they must not, you know what I mean?
It's always the like, father's hair. Like,
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's imagine just, that. You just got to kind of take these universes at their word sometimes. Say, it's okay. It's not the same rules as the real world. It's fine.
But I think that they do think about, the writers, especially nowadays, do think about this to a certain extent. That's why they're giving us this storyline in the first place. So I think we have to at least ask how much of that were they thinking about, and how much of it is like, wouldn't it be cool if a couple were chicks, you know?
Yeah, that's my concern. I mean, I want it all to be coherent, even if it doesn't track with Earth, you know, biology or whatever. At some point, I'd like to know what biology is it supposed to be tracking with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm also finding it interesting that her name Omega means last, even though she was the first one to be created, I think, is what we're taking away from this.
She was at least in the, probably Boba Fett was the first, but she was at least, or was she supposed to be before him? I should know.
I don't know. She did mention that she's older than the Bad Batch.
She's definitely older
than the Bad Batch. She says that at one point.
Yeah. And you kind of look at that and say, yeah, really? Well, how are you counting age here? Because you sure don't look older.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I like that it raises interesting questions like that. But it's also like we have to remember Grogu's 50, Baby Yoda, it's 50.
Right.
But Grogu is an entirely different species.
I have a lot of questions about the aging of that species, but that's neither here nor there.
Right, right. So, you know, I got to say about Omega, when she was first introduced, I was skeptical about the Bad Batch overall because I was like, you're doing a spinoff of a spinoff. But that's the same thing Andor is, right? So,
right.
Yeah.
So that's kind of just a Star Wars tradition now.
Yeah, exactly. Filling in all the gaps.
So I was skeptical to begin with. And we get there and I'm like, all right, the Bad Batch was pretty cool in their arc in the Clone Wars. Now they got to bring a kid along for this whole time. Are they going to return the kid at some point? Mm-hmm. And then I had to say to myself, this is a kid's show. You need a kid's point of view for this show. And then I my eyes opened and I started to really enjoy it more. And Omega ended up being a really cool character and I really enjoyed her arc. I really enjoyed seeing clones get a chance to be parents, which was awesome. I mean, we got that a little bit in the Clone Wars. I think Rex finds a character, a deserter, who has his own family now.
Right. I remember that episode and I really liked it a lot.
But this is the clones getting to like nurture one of their own who never had that. And that feels different.
And I appreciate having characters like Omega on screen. You know, she's a very consistent character, but she's got this soft-hearted determination. And often we're told that having a soft heart gets you into trouble, and she does get into trouble, but then she gets herself and others out of it. And I like to see characters like that succeed. I like that, for instance, at the beginning of this season, she releases Batcher because he's going to be killed. And, you know, they're like, well, he's just going to die out there. And then he doesn't. And he helps her. And I think we need more examples of that in literature where you do the kind-hearted thing and it comes back and helps you later, because that is often how it works in real life, I think.
And now I'm thinking maybe another way that Omega is unique among the clones is she had what we might call a parental relationship for a long time with Nala Se. And was able to, you know, see what it was to form bonds in a, you know, elder younger sort of fashion. And then she, again, this imprinting on the batch, she saw loyalty, she saw cohesion, she saw unity, and that becomes in her, we don't leave anybody behind. We need to rescue this person, we need to take care of this person, you know, this is what we do. So I think as much environment as anything, and I agree with you, Alicia, this is refreshing and I like it. And we definitely could use more of this sort of approach to things. I see that a little bit in jumping ahead in Barriss in her episodes this time. I'm going to push back a little on this being for children. Maybe it started out that way. But holy cow. As I said, one of the episodes was almost triggering. You know, and I'm no longer a child by any stretch of the imagination, but it would be pretty tough. I mean, if I were a parent, I don't think I'd really want to have my kid watching this by themselves. I think I'd want to be there at some point.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I think you have to, I mean, in general, exposing your kids to Star Wars is going to open up some difficult conversations, because this is a dark world of storytelling, which it's probably why people, it reflects our own so much. It's probably why people take to it. But yeah, there's some heavy stories in here.
And I think that is appropriate. I think it's needed. I think that if you don't have your child in a place where they can safely discuss these questions. You're not doing them a service.
Right.
But my objection is, don't advertise a show as, oh, sure, the kids will love it. Because then you get the sense of, right, okay, I can plop them down in front of the TV and this is quote unquote safe for them to watch. I don't think it is. Again, no. Not a parent, shouldn't be even talking about it, but there you are.
No, but okay, fair. Yeah, I just, about Omega's arc, I just appreciate that overall throughout the show, they took so many opportunities to show us how clever she is with her winning of games and and just showing her being a very consistent character. So anything that they do with her now, if they make her force sensitive, if they make her a leader, she really feels like she's earned whatever that status is. She's shown who she is. But I think the most interesting character arc in the show is Crosshair. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the season one twist, I just pitched this to somebody yesterday on our Discord who said, I'm not sure, you know, season one starts off. So I said, the end of season one has an amazing twist. I would say one of the best twists in Star Wars.
Wow. Even better than I Am Your Father?
No, I think that one's better. Okay. That's the classic. You can't beat that. That's the best twist in all of media.
Thank you. I'm relieved.
But this is, it's pretty close. This is, you know,
yeah.
He, you think he's like, oh, you're brainwashed. He's like, I had my chip removed years ago. I chose to do this. Mm-hmm. Great. Absolutely amazing.
Do you think he was telling the truth?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. We haven't gotten anything to the contrary.
We haven't also gotten anything into why he had it removed in the first place, or somebody else must have had it removed because he couldn't have independently said, yeah, I'll remove my chip, could he?
I mean, I guess he was aware of it, right? Because of the others. But
They did know about the chip earlier, but they didn't know it was going to cause Order 66.
Right.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, again, they're being a little jazz hands there, I think, with the whole...
Yeah.
I mean, I think
how did this work?
I think he is maybe the cleverest, even maybe more than Tech, the cleverest of the bunch, and that he wants that clarity of mind. But just it shows just like understanding the situation doesn't mean that you're going to make the quote unquote right decision until, yeah, he gets pushed to a certain point. And then that was the other best twist when he just like took out his commander and took off and was like, nope, I'm done with this now.
Yeah. Well, there is that sort of guiding principle all along, and that is, you know, what's best for Crosshair.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about that. I don't know
why,
if that's true.
Yeah. Where it ended, definitely not, because we saw that he actually did care.
And that's because he realized this is best for me.
I don't know.
I don't think he was ever in the what's best for me. I think he, with the Empire, I think he believed, you know, I'm a soldier. I'm a good soldier, and I follow orders. I think that was really his philosophy. It wasn't necessarily what was best for him. It was how can I best serve the people who created
it. I think Rampart, we'll get to Rampart in a bit, but I think he's the what's best for me category.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, but yes. I see, particularly after Crosshair separates from the others, he has nothing else to evaluate his choices by except his own condition and circumstances. Now, you know, I'm a good soldier. Sure, but then what does that mean? And as he becomes more and more disillusioned, it does have an impact on his choices. And I really do think that he is the cynic of the bunch, or the batch,
sure,
if you like. Mm-hmm. And that will also color and frame your decisions.
I think he sees orders as a black and white thing. At the beginning of the series.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, good soldiers follow orders. Thinking. They don't question. And by the end of the series, he's like, depends on the order. I think he even has a line like that, doesn't he?
Right. Hmm. Yeah. And I think he really had to get to the fundamental, as so many of us do. Like, if you're going to make a big change, you have to question the very thing that makes you who you are, and which in his case is his marksmanship.
And that was damaged.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, well, who am I if I can't do this? And then he goes on this whole journey to heal. And then he loses the hand anyway, which I don't know. Does that mean he doesn't have to worry about the Shake anymore? If he has a prosthetic hand now?
I don't know. How does that work? This well, is again fake science. How do we
yeah.
How do we get into fake science?
But yeah, it's a obviously he's now joining a proud tradition of Star Wars characters who lost a hand.
Yes, and I also see him as a sort of a Han Solo character in this series.
I always thought
it's funny because the personality-wise, yeah, Hunter is the Han Solo.
I don't see Hunter as being as cynical as Han Solo was.
Oh, I guess I don't think of. Well, I guess Han Solo is a bit cynical, but. More like
I'm in it for the money,
puppy.
Princess.
Yeah,
it doesn't get much more cynical than that.
I don't. Yeah, but I think he doesn't necessarily like that's the facade that he puts up. You know, I'm a badass space guy, but he's got a soft heart underneath.
So does Crosshair.
Yeah.
I always liked in the Solo movie where Emilia Clarke's character is just like you do this front, but I know that you're actually a softy.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And I think Omega. Could have said something similar.
Probably not
quite that language, but and again, she is motivated by the we don't leave our own behind.
Mm-hmm.
And Crosshair in that initial phase is saying, look, don't be stupid. Get out of here. Leave me behind. What are you talking about? So it again, it's interesting. Where did she inculcate that compared to Crosshair, who's you know, mantra initially is good soldiers follow orders. And if that means I'm ordered to do this death charge, I will do it.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he found out that the Empire was not going to take care of quote unquote their own, bringing back the wounded clone, that flips. And do you think that flip was too soon or too fast? Or do you think it had been building all along and that was just the last straw?
I think it was building. I think there were hints of it before that. He's like, why are we doing it this way? You know?
Okay. Yeah.
I think to put it in D&D terms, I think that Crosshair is a lawful neutral. And so he liked the structure and the order until he's like, until it crosses a certain line. And he's like, I am not lawful evil.
Well, it's interesting because structure and order and compliance are often excellent ways of avoiding complex choices and moral dilemmas and all that sort of thing. And it's interesting how so many others of the clones have that same imprint in them of, you know, good soldiers follow orders, but how many of them push against that and eventually reject it altogether.
Yeah, I think that's sort of one of the points of what happened with the Jedi, right? Is that the clones were built to have this robotic thinking. And there's actually a lot of interesting questions that arise on the Clone Wars of like, how are we different than the droids?
Right.
Yeah.
But the Jedi let them have their own names and let them decorate their uniforms and give them the sense of individuality that eventually lets them rebel sometimes.
If you want conformists, why are you taking the DNA from a bounty hunter?
Good question. And
he
I
was
think
the perfect
perhaps
physical specimen. Isn't that nice for the actor? I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Tamora.
Yeah. Isn't that nice for him to just be called the perfect physical specimen? I mean, I hope he enjoyed it.
I wonder though if the Jedi weren't doing that individuality thing for their own sakes too. And I don't mean that they were being, you know, self-serving or whatever. I think it's part of the Jedi concept of the forces in all things, and here are living things, and therefore there are forces in them as well, and they are individuals, whatever you want to say, because they needed to interact with them as individuals.
Yeah, I also just think it's proximity. Like, even if you wouldn't necessarily be friends with someone normally, if you work closely with someone, you're probably gonna strike up a conversation every now and then,
right,
just to have rapport.
And to be able to accomplish your orders or goals or whatever.
Yeah. We have to give a shout out to D. Bradley Baker, who played all of the clones.
Incredible.
Yeah. And he must love Crosshair because he gave him the best voice.
Did you see his goodbye TikTok?
Yes. It was so good.
I'm going to play it here. I ripped the audio.
From all of us of the Bad Batch, we wanted to thank all of our many fans
for their loyalty and appreciation,
as well as for their devotion and their love. Aww. We had a blast. Boom! Now let's go finish this.
It's cool to see it on TikTok because then you see that it's just the same man sitting there just modulating his voice to do all of them.
Yeah. Incredibly talented. And he certainly gave... Well, I don't even know if I'll say that Crosser had the most distinctive voice because, I mean,
I said the coolest voice.
The coolest, yeah. To me, it's a creepy voice.
Yeah, okay. Fair.
Yeah, you could see him when in the video, if you watch it, he like pulls his lips back over his teeth. Yeah. And that's how he does the voice. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. That's Crosshair.
And it's kind of ironic that the actor voices Crosshair to say, "We appreciate you for your loyalty." I mean, think about that for a minute.
Yeah. But also, can we give a shout out that he used text voice?
Yes. My gosh. I know. Nice.
Tick.
I love the way Marilyn and I were the Omega shouts tech. Marilyn and I were the last ones holding on to hope that Tech would be back.
Seriously.
Well, I'm glad
that he died. I'm not glad that he died, but I'm glad that he stayed dead.
I still feel like he could be in a back to tank somewhere next to Kino Loy. That's my theory for now.
Oh my God.
I think there's a lot more hope for Kino Loy than there is for Tech.
Yeah.
All we got was broken glasses. I need more.
I'll be shocked if we ever see Tech again.
I think that they would be viewed as lesser scriptwriters if they decided to do that, which is sad, but again, you know. If Dead doesn't mean something, then it's just sort of a chief.
Yeah, you can have Dead mean something, and then I mean, this is basically a comic book story, so.
Well, again, maybe, but I think it's an adult comic book story.
Yeah. But I am surprised that nobody else died. I really thought at one point I actually thought that Wrecker did die. Until he actually turned up, you know, in the epilogue. Mm-hmm. But he was looking real bad, like he wasn't going to make it. Were you guys fearful for anyone in particular in the finale?
Wrecker for sure. Honestly, I could have seen all or most of the Bad Batch dying in the finale and just Omega making it out. The only one I was like, she's going to make it out, was Omega. They're not going to kill the kid.
Right. Mm-hmm. Especially, I think that they're going to want to use her again. Yeah.
Especially, I think she's going to have some. That's an interesting thing, too. We didn't really see a lot of force action from her. Mm-hmm. So, are we going to see that eventually?
Maybe we were seeing a different kind of force action and we just haven't recognized it.
Yeah. Is she ever going to show up to Luke's School of Witchcraft and Wizardry?
No.
Maybe Omega's going to ride the Mythosaur.
Ooh.
Somebody's going to ride a Mythosaur.
Somebody's got to. I should have preloaded my Bo-Katan song on that one.
Oh, well.
Well, especially, since we hear from her later. But
you could always sing it now, John, if you really want.
That's all right. That's all right.
It was kind of a quiet season for Hunter and Wrecker, though, wasn't it? They were just kind of playing mom and dad all season.
Who's who?
Hunter is definitely mom and Wrecker's dad.
Okay.
I agree.
All right. Fair enough.
I think of Wrecker as the fun uncle.
Fair.
What's that like popcorn thing that he was always getting with Omega?
Popcorn thing?
Oh, it's a snack. He loves.
He always gets the snack. That looks like popcorn.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I forget.
I love that he's like the uncle who's like, kid, here, I got my snacks here. We're going on a road trip. Very funny.
Yeah. Who's your favorite member of the batch, John?
Oh, that's so tough. I did really like Tech, and he's gone now.
He was my favorite too.
I think mine is Hunter.
Hunter, okay. Yeah.
I mean, if you're accepting Omega, but I think it's Hunter. I mean, he does, insofar as they have a leader, he appears to take that role. But it's also, he's like the quiet one who sits in the corner and lets everybody else sound off and put all of the pieces on the table. And then after having listened and thought, then he says, okay, this is what we're going to do. And the fact that all the others follow him tell me that they look upon him as their leader too.
Yeah.
So
like post Clone Wars, after they've all defected,
right?
You know, they could have chosen anyone as a leader,
presumably,
but he just was the leader, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he embodies that, but not in an overbearing, dominating kind of way.
No,
which I really like.
Well, he clearly has heart, and the fact that the others follow him and, you know, clearly see that, I think that he's also speaks more to them, you know, as I look at the way what people want in a leader. And that also is a way of judging what kind of person the follower is, if you know what I mean.
I do. I understand. Yeah. Yeah. What I see there is they trust him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that speaks volumes to me.
I also think of the Tywin Lannister quote from Game of Thrones. Any man who must say, "I am the king," is no true king. And Hunter never has to say, "I'm in charge." He never has the pull rank.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Although, I mean, I have to say, I always identified with Omega the most because I guess maybe because she's the girl and she loves animals a lot. So
both good reasons.
She loves Betcha.
Betcha.
You're much better at it than I am. That's pretty good. we got to keep moving because we're running out of time.
Well, so let's jump over to Emery. Speaking of clones, I thought the arc was pretty obvious to me what it was going to be, but I thought it was really well done, and I really appreciated especially how they used that doll twice to show her breakthrough moments.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was pretty likable. Do you want to see more, John?
No.
No? Her do you want to see over. More Marilyn?
Yeah, I agree with John. I she was there. She served a purpose. I mean, I have lots of questions, but I guess, you know, if they don't ever choose to answer them, it's not going to, you know, get up my nose or anything. Just the same kind of questions I have with Omega. Why was she created? When was she created? Why did she tell Omega they were sisters? Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And then seem to completely ignore the fact. So why bring it up in the first place?
Yeah, but not ultimately.
Not ultimately, and yet you could argue that it was as much, maybe if not more, the children that were snatched and put into that horrible institution.
Yeah.
That changed her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think especially Omega, because seeing Omega go back for Crosshair, seeing Omega, that Omega released Batcher and it helped her. And I think also seeing that Nala Se helped Omega, and I think that made Emery realize there was another way, because she had never seen anything other than what she was raised with, this empire.
Certainly all those things seeded her and got her started.
Yeah.
But I think it was, you know, there you could say there was some justification for bringing in Omega because she was a clone and because she was Nala Se's initially and so on, all part of the project thing. These are four random kids snatched from various parts of the universe for absolutely no reason, brought in where they don't know anybody, they don't know what's going on. I mean, it was really incredible.
If that didn't change her, then she would have been a different character. Yeah.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do hope for more just because of these questions that you bring up. Like, I want to know indeed, when was she created and why and how, and I still have questions about this whole cloning program. If they answer them in a novel or something, then I'm happy with that too. I'm one of the many people I know who saw her with Crosshair at the end and was like, ooh, maybe they'll get together. Wait a minute. This is not Game of Thrones.
No, talk about close genetics. That really would be on the top.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I can't see them doing that sort of going forward from here in a continuous timeline. I mean, if they want to plug in something that happened before the whole Bad Batch arc.
Yeah.
I might be more comfortable with that, but.
I think they're going to, I mean, all the villains were around this area called Tantis, this Mount Tantis on the planet called Wayland, which comes right out of the Legends Thrawn books. So it was really cool to see that. And to see, you know, as we talked about, the Project Necromancer is the whole bringing back of Palpatine. And yeah, just to see them setting up those things. And I think they're not done with that. I think they have to go go a little more into that. I don't know. Do you think we're going to see more of the CloneX assassin program? The brainwashed clones?
Well, they've lost all of Nala Se's stuff.
Yeah. But that wasn't for the
brainwashing. It sounded as though they were intending to just shift everything over to Project Stardust.
Yeah, true.
I think maybe except for, you know, Palpatine's backups, right. they're done with the whole cloning thing.
And for anyone who doesn't know, Project Stardust is the building of the Death Star.
Mm-hmm. Oh, come on. You have to have seen Rogue One. Please.
but also, they do have a later cloning effort. We know that because you have the whole arc in The Mandalorian.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So, but so as I said, happens. They have the technology somewhere. But
they have to start over kind of now. But the brainwashing thing, too, also reminded me of those troopers we saw in The Mandalorian, too. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think it's interesting. They seem to be tying together these two eras. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. But I am sure glad that Dr. Hemlock got what was coming to him. I found that pretty satisfying.
I think that had to have happened, don't you?
Yeah. Well, especially mm-hmm. because like when they were walking out to this structure on this bridge and it was misty and it was a circular structure, it really looked like they wanted us to be thinking of Kamino, you know? So mm-hmm. It was just like what Nala Se did, one of my favorite Glipshitto characters, if she counts as such, justified my love for her by taking out the other one, Rampart, I thought, did you guys think that Rampart was going to get like a Callus style redemption arc, like in Rebels? Because I thought that's where it was going.
I didn't think he was. I thought he was going to either accidentally help or just help out of self-interest. But yeah. I didn't think he was going to have like a change of heart.
Oh, gosh, no. No. Heart? What's that? No. I don't think he showed much of that at all. In some ways, I mean, well, I don't know how good he was at following orders. Because I don't think he was supposed to do what he did on Kamino. I don't know if those were orders or mm-hmm. not, but... Hemlock was the stereotypical evil mad scientist, and there isn't much you can do with him. But Rampart having these opportunities over and over and over, he kept saying, "Oh, I can't do that. I can't do that." But he did. And then as soon as he saw an opportunity of redeeming himself, that's all he was interested in. He just wanted to get on the side of the biggest bully in the playground.
Yeah. No, and, I was glad they subverted my expectations. I thought he was interesting.
Yeah.
But this whole thing makes me aware of how one can be at a real disadvantage if one isn't familiar with all the different pieces.
Or
you know, in the books, in the video games, you know, outside of the certain whatever canon you consider it to be. And you get confused and you don't recognize the references unless someone as brilliant as Alicia points them out to you. And then you sort of build your background, if you will, and understand the backstory a little bit. But I'm sure there were things that were happening there that just went right over my head. And I don't even mean Easter eggs, but just, you know, particular plot points.
Well, you read The Lord of the Rings and you don't know who Beren and Luthien are, right?
Right,
you know,
right, exactly.
There's any universe this deep is just going to have a learning curve. And I think we just have to learn to live with that.
I think it's also a benefit, too. Like I was saying, with this season, I was not surprised by how it ended because I knew it had to end with the cloning stuff like that. You know, this was probably one of the reasons why the second half was slower for me because the reveals were things I already knew had to be revealed to make the dots line up on the timeline. So if you're experiencing this in timeline order, or if you're experiencing this without knowing these extra things, then you're going to have more surprises.
Right, which may be why I was happy with the second half, more happy than you were, because, you know, as I say, there's just a whole lot I don't know. And I'll just say, anytime they gave an overhead view of Tantus, I thought of something rather different than Kamino. that image, wow.
Yeah. Well, no, the overhead view is, yeah.
The overhead view, it was pretty explicit. And I kind of wondered where they got that whole design feature in the first place and why they followed it. But
yeah. Well, you know what? Nala Se got rid of the main copies of all the clone stuff. And if you don't want to lose your backups, make sure you subscribe to Dropbox. I'm just kidding. We're not doing an ad here. I'm not doing an ad here.
But
Palpatine
I mean,
is an avid subscriber of Google Drive.
Uh-oh. I'm leaving right now.
I'm definitely a Google Drive proponent for the record. But I loved Nala Se's. She was, you know, at the beginning, she started out kind of very morally gray. And but we saw in her case, it really was, I think, her love for Omega above all else that made her stand up and do what she did in the end, which, you know, she's one of the last of her entire species.
There's That's right.
And left out there.
I think that was followed up very closely by her love of her craft.
Mm-hmm.
More than simply the scientists seeing how far they can push things or whatever. It she really, as she was dying, you know, she referred to it as being Kaminoan.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, their whole species, their whole planet, which of course is the Star Wars weakness that we talk about sometimes, you know, the monoculture of a planet, but setting that aside, she was motivated by her pride in her craft and her people, but even more by her love. And I always liked her better than her colleague, whose name I can't remember, who was the one who betrayed her to Hemlock in the first place. Just that she seemed unendingly sad, even before she was, you know, trapped here and so forth. And maybe that's just how they create their visage and so forth. But even in the even when we were first introduced to Kamino in the prequels, I don't know. It's an interesting
conception.
They're
not emotional. Yeah, they're not an emotional people.
Well, in one sense, they're not. But in another sense, I was constantly getting emotional cues from them. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm just reading myself into her.
No, I think it's well done the way they do it. Subtle.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So I'm looking at the outline, and I see that the longest section by far is on a character who appeared in literally one episode.
Imagine that. I can't
Ventress
imagine
is here,
why
kids.
That should be.
Well, I was going to say, well, we have to talk about the other special guests, starting with Asajj Ventress, who I've been arguing on the Discord and anywhere else people were listening to me for years now. She's not dead. She lived through worse in the comics. I never doubted her. She's back. We got at the end of the novel, you know, we got those Night Sister whispers and the glowing water and you know, she was preserved and stuff. So we see her back with, she's got her yellow saber from the book. She's got a new look with her hair growing out and she's got scarring on her face, which seems to suggest that whole, you know, the lightning strike, and she makes that comment that, I should have written down exactly what she wrote, but it was what she said, but it was, I've got a few lives left in me or something like
that.
So we've been
promised. So she's part cat.
Yes, exactly. That's what I took away from it too. So now I love her more.
A new version of the Flurkin.
Yeah. We've been promised though answers. So I think that's definite confirmation that we're getting her back in some form in the near future.
I was really glad to see her. I thought she was one of the more interesting characters in the Clone Wars by the end, and I did read the book. I read Dark Disciple, and that was really great, and I was so bummed to see that she died at the end of the book, but this was great. This was great.
Yeah.
Witches never really die, they just reincarnate.
Right? Yes, exactly.
But at least there's a plausible lore reason why she came back here, right? That's why I don't want somebody like Tech to come back.
But Tech, like, they didn't show him definitely dead. They just showed smashed glass.
Game of Thrones has ruined the discourse on character death.
It's Game of Thrones.
Well, and there's the guy that crawls out from under the dumpster, right? I've heard that instance several times, although I've never seen that show either.
Oh, The Walking Dead, yeah.
Yes. But this is another example of I know virtually nothing about Ventress. And so the whole, you know, did she die? Didn't she die? She's back. All of this is something that I am interested in from a distance because I really don't know any of it.
So my most important question is, does Voss know that she's alive? So in the novel, she...
Quinlan Voss.
Yeah, she and Quinlan Voss form a romance. But then, of course, you know, he's very emotionally lays her to rest, quote unquote, at the end of the novel. So... He was last seen in Obi-Wan Kenobi being linked to something called the Path, which is a way of smuggling force sensitive kids to safety. So that comes up a couple of times. Speaking of force sensitive kids, the kiddos, I'm wondering if we're going to get cameos of them or something older later in the timeline.
I'm saying we're building up the cast for Luke Skywalker's School for Magical Children.
Well, wait, but this is because that's a lot later.
They're no longer adults, children.
Yeah, fine, fair enough. Yeah,
they finally got their Hogwarts letter.
Yeah, maybe Rey's Jedi Academy is with a bunch of old Jedi.
Didn't that get canceled?
No, they're working on the film with her, with Daisy Ridley.
I never believe that anything they say is coming is actually coming.
That's fair.
I mean, you need to wait until the ads are up for...
Yeah, when it's in theaters, I will believe them.
Right, yeah.
Right.
But were you guys excited about the Cad Bane cameo? Any other Cad Bane fans? Just me?
Cad Bane is fine. I'm not, like, super hot on Cad Bane. I know he's popular with a lot of people. He gets a little... His shtick gets a little annoying for me. Like, if I'm going to have that style of character, I'd rather just have Boba Fett, or I'd rather just have somebody like Crosshair, and yeah.
Is Cad Bane the sort of Western bodybuilder?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He doesn't do it for me. He really feels out of place.
So just me.
You know who I want instead of Cad Bane? Give me Hondo.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'm excited for that too. I want more Hondo.
I see that. Yeah. Although, of course, he's not a bounty hunter, but that's fine. After a while, bounty hunters seem to get kind of monochrome. Maybe that's why they dress them in such different ways. Except for, who's the woman who winds up being...
Fee?
No. This is in Mando World, or Book of Boba Fett.
Oh.
What's his first line of his marshal, if you will. Zennec Shand?
Fennec Shand. She showed up as well in this... season.
She did, and I knew who she was, and I like her complexity. Mm-hmm. She seems to have something of a moral compass. I just haven't figured out where it's pointing.
Yeah, fair.
And we got Tarkin and Palpatine, of course, and I love also Senator Chuchi. I love the Pantorans are just really pretty, and she's like nice and cool and smart.
I did appreciate more development on Senator Chuchi.
Yeah, she's just one of those characters that pops up every once in a while in the background, and that's good. I'm happy with that. And the Zillow Beast is free, so that feels like something that's being planted for a later story, because it's just roaming around the planet Wayland, which is a mid-rim planet, by the way.
You know, some part of me can picture the Empire deciding they're going to use Tantus to test their Stardust project, because there's so much on there that they don't want. And could greatly be worried about.
I thought their first test was Jeddah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that's the first time they fired it.
Right.
No doubt. I can't think it's the only time that they tested.
Okay. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, I just, they can. I wonder what's going to happen, if Tantus will come back in later cloning stories, like around the Mando Ahsoka timeline. But. So we also got the Wolf Rex reunion, which is a nice one for Rebels fans, because of course we see those two together in Rebels living out their old age together. And, we also got that nice reference to the Clone Wars finale when Rex admits that he faked his death. So that actually kind of made me emotional just mentioning that finale. Fee pops by to say hi. So, and we get another reminder of Tex, speaking of being emotional. but yeah, what do you guys think about Cid's story ends off screen with her being tortured for information about Fee? Does that feel like justice?
You know, that one completely slipped me by.
I didn't even think about it. Cid is dead to me. No. don't betray my boys and my girl. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She did them dirty, and she paid for it also.
Yeah, she did.
Not that I condone torture even for the most severe of criminals.
No.
But, you know, she definitely deserved to be punished in some way. you know, meet justice in some way. But I don't think torture is the way to do that.
I think it's a dark ending for her. But yeah, a lot of torture in Star Wars.
Well, she was living on that edge, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
I think she always thought she could take care of herself. And
high risk, high reward kind of lifestyle.
Yeah. But overall, it was a pretty happy ending for our crew. I couldn't believe that Pabu lived. I thought that...
I can't either.
I'm glad, actually, though.
I'm nervous about Pabu. I really am. And it's really not consistent because they know the location now.
Mm-hmm.
They already, you know, threatened to trash it once. There's nothing to stop them from coming back and doing it again. I was really surprised that they ended it on Pabu. I mean, I get the happy feels thing. Now, that's almost the children's story aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
If they weren't trying to go for a children's audience, I wonder if they would have done that rather than trying to find a completely different location to hang.
Yeah. On the children's story, I know you raised before, it might not be appropriate for children. I think a certain age... You can say, all right, it might be appropriate for children. But you think about the Star Wars movies, which George Lucas has repeatedly said are children's movies. They're for children. Which I know I disagree with him on a lot of that, too. But Episode 3 has a genocide.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how appropriate for children some of the Star Wars movies really are. But
right. Yeah,
but if you're going as that as the gauge of what's appropriate for children, this is tame.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You know, watching Anakin crawl limbless out of the lava, I think is quite a lot worse than anything we see in here.
I agree, particularly because it's, you know, it's not animated; it's live action.
I was 12 years old when I watched that, and my dad... Well,
that explains a few things. No.
I'm pretty sure.
My dad took me out of school to go see it in the theater on the release day.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. He said, he surprised me. He's like, you did well year, and I want to bring you to the movies today. I was like, that's so nice. Good memories.
Speaking of age, when do we think this epilogue for The Bad Batch took place? Because, so we hear that Omega's a rebellion pilot, so... Does that mean it's during the original story, which is 18 years after the Bad Batch season 3? In which case, I just have questions like, what's with the aging of the clones? Hunter looks like he was getting on, but not that old. Not as old as Rex and Wolf look at, like in Rebels, which is set earlier. And how long do Lurker Hounds live?
Well, Rex was one of the original clones, right? He was one of like the first round. And are the Bad Batch younger than Rex?
I don't know. Probably, I guess. Because
even years is more significant for the clones than for regular people.
I went into a deep dive, and there's a lot of argument online over whether do the clones age at double the rate, or do they just fast age up front and then just have that initial 10-15 years cut off their time's lifespan.
Hmm.
But we need a Batcher plushie.
I think that could sell.
Oh, I need plushies.
I'll meet you when we get
Star Wars
animals. Doctor Who plushies from the specials.
Ah.
They've already made those. Come on.
Oh, did
they? No. I'm saying they made them for the show.
Oh,
just manufacture them. And
I
don't understand why they don't just take our money for these sorts of things.
But I'm not going to get a Star Beast. I'm sorry.
No. Well, I want one that there's this kind of stuffed cat that you squeeze it and it goes from like a cute face to like an angry toothy face. So I want a Star Beast
Maybe
plushie
not.
Like that.
That's pretty funny. I like that.
I'm hoping that they are going to plug Omega into some future something or other in which she is a pilot and extremely good at it and that kind of thing. I don't know at what point in the timeline that would be happening or what form of show it might take place in, but
season 2.
Oh, wow.
No, I don't think so. I don't think she's
probably not.
Well, but if you allow her to develop,
if
you allow her to develop, I think she could. But
yeah, but Tony Gilroy doing Andor is not the cameo guy. He's not. He's not like, let me throw in the member berries. He's like, this is my story. Everyone else can get out of here.
Yeah. But one thing I do notice them setting up in both this and the Tales of the Empire is, like I said, that story of the path. You know, the kids are being sent on the path. And mm-hmm. so I'm wondering if we're going to get an announcement soon. Tales of the Path, anyone? No, probably something else. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe a continuation, you know, like the Bad Batch continued the Clone Wars. Maybe there's going to be a path-based story that will continue the Bad Batch.
And maybe Omega will feature strongly in that.
Yeah. Yeah. And Ventress.
Would make sense.
Very cool yeah. stuff. Well, this is a lovely send-off to the Bad Batch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the path, we have some very different paths to talk about in Tales of the Empire.
Yep. All right. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll get into that. And we're back, and we are already short on time, so we got to get right into Tales of the Empire. Let's talk about overall, I think, the arcs of Morgan Elsbeth and Barriss Offee.
Yeah, so I just wanted to, for those who are paying attention to this sort of thing, I just want to point out that the first Morgan Elsbeth episode, The Path of Fear, takes place 20 BBY, so 2 years before the final season of The Bad Batch. The second episode, probably around 7 BBY, based on Thrawn being an admiral, although people are thrown by the Star Destroyer that shows up in terms of timeline. And the third episode is 9 BBY, so that sets up directly the Mando Season 2, Episode 3, where we first meet Ahsoka in live action.
Nice. But,
yeah.
Well, I'm going to risk drawing Alicia's ire here by saying that the whole Morgan story seemed very flat to me. I wanted a more interesting Morgan, one with some more nuance than she had, and something more than just a thirst for vengeance.
Hmm.
She was very contained, very closed in. I wanted more about the Night Sister culture. I wanted to know about their abilities. I wanted to know how they formed, how they interact with the Force. You know, what is it about them? If you're going to instance them, I mean, don't tell me to go and read 6 books, because that begins to feel a little bit like you know, the Avengers and the MCU, which I don't think Star Wars wants to go down that path, but I hope they don't. It was just, she just was one more villain using whatever was available to her to dominate and to be cruel. I didn't understand what her objective was.
Hmm.
And I'm not even sure that she understood. They just didn't take time to spell it out. And I just think they could do better.
Okay. What did you think of the Mountain Clan that we met in the first?
Loved them. Loved the statement. No surprises here, right? With the Pakula scale and all that. It's no surprise that she... Because I do not choose to fight does not mean that I cannot. Although I was what she did fighting, I don't know. I mean, you make the point, Alicia, that it seems to be very strongly more defensive than aggression and attack. Kind of like what Obi-Wan tells Luke about using the Force.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's kind of, yeah, it's, they're light side users, if we can assume based on the light they generate. So. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting contrast. You know, they come from legends, and this is them finally being confirmed, or at least seeing them in canon. And it just mm-hmm. makes me more curious about all the other sorts of clans on Dathomir. And I'm excited that we're going to get more of this. Did you find them a kind of nun-coded culture with the way they're dressed and the fact their leader's called the matron?
No, because nuns are not the only form of contemplative life.
Okay.
You can have, I mean, you might go to Tibet, I think, to look for some of their influences and origins, that the whole setting apart of some people to be special and different because they are contemplatives. That's not what this culture is. It seems to me the whole culture is connected with whatever it is that the clan leader, the clan mother, exhibits very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get a sense that there has to be celibacy. You know, I don't get a sense of sort of a top down administrative structure, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
It's right. just, you know, that all of them have this gift, if you want to call it that. Some of them develop it more than others, and mm-hmm. some of them are steeped in it and study it more deeply than others, and others just say, yeah, well, I'm glad that this exists because it enhances my life, but it's not really a part of my life. So
yeah,
I wonder if this is part of this whole idea that's been started in Ahsoka of anyone can learn to use the Force.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This has been kind of put forward, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure I'm totally on board with that.
Okay. But
I see an
analogy. Maybe here is like we have the society that assumes. I think if I'm going to be generous with this, I think that it is an interesting thing to say that the assumptions of society can alter the abilities of people, right? You know, we talk about all the time, like the expectations you give to a child can affect their outcomes. Mm-hmm. And in this society, they say anyone can use the Force, so we're all going to learn how to. Whereas in general galactic society, they say these special few can use the Force. So only the people who are super naturally right. strong with it will ever get to it. It's similar to the Wheel of Time, actually, I think of, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. like there are people who are so sort of in tune with the one power that they'll just get picked out and go right to the White Tower. But there's also right. people who can learn to use the one power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If it binds us all together and exists in all things, then yeah, everybody has access to it. It's kind of like musical talent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there mm-hmm. are occasionally tone deaf people. Other than that, everybody has access to music. Everybody can resonate with it differently. Some people can devote their whole lives to it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And become incredibly skilled artists. And so just on that same kind of a scale. And I can see where this would also fit in with Luke saying the Jedi have to end, because imposing that kind of a system makes it much easier to assume, well, I'm certainly not a Jedi, so I guess I don't have access to the Force.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm just glad that we're seeing more variety in Force users, because it doesn't make sense that there would only yes. everyone would do it the same way. And it was cool to see General Grievous back. I think he looks scarier than ever with that tricky third arm. I'm glad that they at least addressed the fact that Morgan didn't have the face markings, but I kind of think it would make more sense in line with like other Night Sisters stories we've had, if instead of having her rescued by the Mountain Clan, what if she left the Mountain Clan to join the Night Sisters? And that's why she didn't have the face markings and felt alienated from them and blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I'm not trying to rewrite it. I think what we got is interesting.
Rewrite it. I really want Morgan to be an interesting three-dimensional character. But I just don't feel like I've gotten that yet.
I do think, though, that her actions in the end, like maybe she kind of doomed the Mountain Clan. You know, she brought the attention to them where they were just kind of safe in their little perch.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that guilt is something that drives the rest of her arc through the other two episodes.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I can buy that.
It was super interesting to see her as a designer of the TIE Defenders. I think.
Yeah. Now that I would have liked to have seen more of, because that's an added dimension. And yeah. then it just kind of all disappears and she's back being an evil magistrate.
Yeah. I would
granted,
like to
if they're
see...
short episodes, you can only do so much.
But... Right. I like to see more about her affinity with spacecraft like that. And yeah, but of course, very recognizable. She got that disdain from Moff Isdain.
Almost every woman can probably relate to that at some point in their life.
Exactly. Yeah. I think as a magistrate of Corvus, it was interesting to see that she really meant to help the people at first. And then it was almost like she kind of gave up at some point. She's like, there's nothing I can do for these people. I just need to think about my own goals.
I think
which
it was
I would like,
the moment
I wish
where,
he'd spill them out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was the moment where the Empire is like, yeah, we're just going to take your resources. Like, we don't,
yeah,
you know. I think she, in that moment, goes, I can't succeed with kindness. She feels really defeated there. And she's like, I have to be colder. I have to be crueler to succeed in this world.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm thinking of Sauron.
mm.
who initially thought, yeah, I can bring order and control. And of course, Vader, you know, similar
right.
kinds of
right,
temptation
right.
to Luke.
Right. And of course, I've got to love Thrawn showing up. And not just Thrawn, we also got Pelion again. He's his second from Legends, and we've been seeing him more and more after those Rebels and Mando teases. And we got Rook, who...
Rook. Rook. It feels like almost Yiddish.
Yeah.
It does. It does. He reminds me of Gollum.
Yeah.
He did the very first time I saw him. He really does seem to be a Star Wars version of Gollum.
I mean, yeah, so Rook, he shows up and dies in Rebels, which is interesting because mm-hmm. he's the one who kills Thrawn in Legends. But you can really see in this why he would want to kill Thrawn. And I appreciated that, you know, when Thrawn comes and dismisses him, he's like, okay, monkey, thank you for you're done dancing with your knives. You can creep away now. And he gives him this look. I'm like, ooh, still feel like he's going to kill him somehow. And I have to say, I replayed the conversation over and over between Morgan and Thrawn just because I love the music so much. So, and it's actually super charming. So Kevin Kiner is a composer, done lots of stuff. And his kids, Sean and Deanna, have been, I mean, they're not that they're children, you know, but his children, they've been contributing. And so for the first time, all three of them are credited for this show as a family, which I just think is really nice. And they did. I think they really enhanced it, updated the Star Trek. The Star Wars sound.
Get out of here with your your stuff. I don't even remember the name of the ship. The Enterprise.
Enterprise. Yeah.
But yeah, I do agree that revenge is still kind of a boring motive and not really well defined because, like, I guess she doesn't know the Empire was behind the attack on the Night Sisters, but I still need more clarity. Who's she getting revenge against?
Yeah.
I guess Grievous. Does she know Grievous is dead?
I think she must know Grievous is dead because he was a major figure and she's a magistrate.
Mm-hmm. And Dooku's dead too. Like everyone who directly ordered that attack is gone.
Right.
So she has anger with nowhere for it to go. So it goes to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, we know, of course, from watching Ahsoka what her long game is, and it seems to be to reach Peridia and her people there. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why they didn't set that part up more in this.
It's a good question.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Again, put Peridia in really there, and suddenly enough. She does have a motivation. But
yeah, it really was not enough information. And, you know, you said you only have so much time, but they made this, they could have made them longer.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I don't know why they're so short. Yeah, yeah.
What an idea.
But, John, I have to ask, were you excited to hear Bo-Katan's voice on the phone when they called for help from Corvus?
I'm more of a Bo-Katan now than I was previously. I really did enjoy her towards the end of season 3 of Mando. But I just, I do still have the petulant sitting on the throne Bo-Katan stuck in my head sometimes, and I'm like, oh my god, you're exhausting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's a touch of the father speaking. Come on, kid, get over yourself.
Oh my god. My daughter started doing this new fun thing where you say, hey, do you want to eat dinner? I can't. Everything is I can't now. So that's the new rebellion.
I can't eat.
I can't.
Well,
it's
a more refined version of no.
She'll go, I can't do that right now. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Okay.
Many times have you and your wife said that to her? We can't do that now.
Not that often. The only thing I ever do is if I have to work from home and I go to like get a cup of water or something. She'll be like, hey, let's go play. I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't right now. I got to go back to work. But maybe she learned it there.
I can't.
A little translation, you know, filtering, but that sounds pretty familiar.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, about Morgan, I think that her tale's ultimately about desperation for belonging. So I found it, I obviously liked it more than you guys. I found it kind of a tragedy. I do still hope something comes of this whole trip to Peridia we saw in Ahsoka to get some payoff for her. But I still feel like there's more to know about her. And that is the one disappointment for me here.
I would love to have heard about desperation for belonging.
I saw it.
I sure don't see it in the
Magistrate. I saw it. because I saw even in the beginning in the Magistrate, you know, she was trying to help them until she felt rejected. And then she kind of just handled that badly. But someone who handled it better.
And yet it sounds like every dominating tyrant I've ever heard.
Someone you guys were more keen on was Barriss Offee.
I liked her because she had an arc and there were explanations. And I could relate to what her process, what she went through. You know, having been jailed for life, quote unquote, to be given an alternative, heck yeah. And then through all each of the episodes, you know, the second of her arc is called Realization. The realization that actually, no, I can't do it this way.
Yeah.
And I do have to find, you know, having tried to convince herself that, yes, this is a good thing and they're bringing benefits and realizing, heck, actually, no, they are not. And then leaving and finding her own path. And yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. For anyone who's keeping track of dates, the first episode, Devoted, takes place 19 BBY, so the year before the Bad Batch finale, which is, you know, when Order 66 happens, because, of course, we need to see it again from a new vantage point. and then the, episode 5, Realization, takes place 1 year later, so the same year as the Bad Batch finale, and 18 BBY, and then we jump way ahead to The Way Out, which is, it has to take place after Obi-Wan, because the fourth sister was in Obi-Wan and not redeemed yet. So it must be like 9 ABY.
Interesting.
Yeah, we got to see. I mean, I do love the Inquisitors in general. Are you guys Inquisitors fans?
I like them. I like them.
Yeah.
It's an interesting concept. I can understand the necessity because not every Jedi was attached to a division of clones at the time of Order 66. So there's still looking, it's a big galaxy.
And I both love and I think it's stupid when they have that like helicopter thing with their lightsabers.
Oh, I think they only did it like once, but I loved it. I mean, it's so stupid, but I loved it.
It is very stupid. It's like, what, how does that, okay.
Maybe it enhances force jumping somehow.
No.
Oh, come on, guys. It's a special effect.
It looks cool.
I'm glad they haven't brought that into
hands,
live action.
Nothing to see over here. Move on.
Yep.
But it was great to see, though, the Grand Inquisitor back. And did you notice that Marok was with him from Ahsoka, the green gas bag? So I feel like we're going to get some. We are eventually going to find out who Marok is, I think. And of course, the fourth sister, Lynn Rakish from Obi-Wan. And Vader, I kept wondering, like, I wish they had done something, or maybe it's better that they didn't, to acknowledge the fact that Vader walks in at the end of the first episode and sees this woman who took down his Padawan and kind of, in some ways, helped spin him toward the dark side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wondered about that, too. I think, again, as John said earlier, if they'd made them longer episodes, we probably would have seen that. But to even bring that up would be to yank the focus over to Vader, and he already gets enough focus just by walking in a room. So
right, and Vader also. I do think Vader, at this point in the story, especially, is like Anakin Skywalker is dead. Any prejudices he had against anyone in the past doesn't matter.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That he is really considering himself gone, a different person.
Like a new person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's only later, after he finds out that he has children, that he starts to be like, am I Anakin still?
Right. Because he kind of, in a way, turned because of that, because he thought that the kids died with Padme.
Right. Yeah, nothing else. Nothing was tying him to being Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, there's an interesting question that's come up a few times on our podcast of, like, what if Anakin had not been dismembered and forced to become the suit, right? Mm-hmm. Would he have been publicly Anakin Skywalker still? You know, hero of the Empire who sided with the Emperor against the traitorous Jedi.
Right.
And how would that have changed the whole perception?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would love to see, we have visions and that's great, but I'd love to see some real what if spins on stuff like that.
There was a great moment in Ahsoka where you see red-eyed Anakin, you know, really like Vader Anakin, but as full you know, fully bodied. Mm-hmm. And we talk about like that. That is what Obi-Wan deprived the Emperor of having at his side. Mm-hmm. Because right. That's even scarier. Full powered Anakin as Vader.
Hmm. I don't know, because I feel like when you look back in the history of the Sith, the ones who just live in constant pain are often among the most powerful, I think, because that pain keeps them
fuels their rage.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Speaking of fueling rage redemption arcs, what do you think about the fact that Barriss's redemption arc included her pushing someone off a cliff to her apparent death?
That all was kind of vague to me.
Hmm.
What I got most from the second of her three episodes was that her motivation for becoming an Inquisitor included some Jedi-like tendencies, i.e. she did believe that, you know, she'd already had the preparation of, yeah, these Jedis really are not what they're all cracked up to be. And so continue feeding of the line, yeah, they were really messed up and now we're fixing things, would still appeal to the Jedi portion of her, if you will, and wanting to do genuine good for the galaxy. But the deeper she got in and the more she was exposed to what they were expected to do and why,
mm-hmm.
She realized that wanting to do genuine good for the galaxy, the only way to accomplish that was through an extinction of free will.
Yeah.
That as long as you have free will, you're going to have conflict.
Right.
And you can't create a utopia. And anytime you hear anybody promising you that they can create a perfect world, you should smile politely and look for the nearest exit. Their methods are eventually going to have to be not to your liking.
Mm-hmm. But But we can do better. And I think it's...
Of course we can.
Through cultivating free will. But that's always what it comes down to, indeed, the classic, especially fiction, philosophical debate.
Well, cultivating free will in a way that recognizes its limitations. And how do you allow for all the other free wills?
Yeah. So I have to point out a cool detail that I, especially Star Wars Explained, pointed out to me, but also I've heard other people talking about it since. So people were talking about how much older Barriss Offee looked in the final episode versus mm-hmm. the fourth sister. And one thing that we've learned from other properties about force healing is that you give yourself a part. You give away a part of yourself to the person you're healing, like a bit of your life force. So that could be an explanation for why she aged more rapidly.
That is not in keeping with the usual healing systems in our cultures. So I find it interesting that they chose that explanation.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that says something about her too. But yeah, do we think she's dead?
No.
I think
no, not. She's not dead. She's not dead. This one I'll give to you.
She's earned her not deadness. I think this triptych of episodes, I think, is asking, when do you realize you've gone too far? That would be my summary of the theme.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. I thought that this was a good way to explore what felt like a really genuine redemption arc for an Inquisitor.
Right.
And it's really interesting to see how she was made into an Inquisitor, because it only validates what she was already doing, right? You know, she ended up in prison because she had assumed that the Jedi were corrupt and starting a war based on this.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, you're right. You were absolutely right. And so now you're going to be rewarded with a place on the Emperor's elite team, elite squad. Mm.
To quote unquote, fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Very cautionary tale about fake news and check your sources.
Yeah. Well, right. I think both these characters were presented with, you know, they had anger based on things that had, you know, happened to them. And they had reasons to want revenge. But then the question is, do you become the monster that you seek to destroy?
Exactly.
I also just have to point out that this ends with them sending off more people to the path where Quinlan Vos, Ventress's boyfriend, is. They seem to reference Ahsoka. I'm just putting it out there for all the internet points. Path show, these characters, bring it on.
I'm into it.
Make it so.
I think that's a good note to leave it on. So if you want to send feedback to us, which we have none of today, you can send it to starwars@thelorehounds.com. You can go to thelorehounds.com, use the contact form to leave us a voicemail or a contact form entry. And there's plenty of stuff going on here at the Lorehounds. So we hope that you'll join us for things like House of the Dragon Season 2, which we're doing our Season 1 rewatch right now. We are about to start Doctor Who. Alicia and I are going to be talking about that new season. It's kind of a soft reboot because there is continuity with the previous stuff, but
they're calling it season one.
It's season one. It's season one for some reason. I guess because it's going on Disney Plus for the first time.
Yeah.
There you go. The mouse has to have its cut.
Yep. The Acolyte is coming. So plenty of stuff coming on the Lorehounds feed.
Yeah, you and I are going to talk the Acolyte weekly.
Yes, you and I are going to talk the Acolyte for Star Wars stuff. And that's going to be a lot of fun. It's on the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, which you can already subscribe to now and start off with the Old Republic, the origins of the Jedi, into the High Republic, where we'll be talking about the Acolyte. So check the show notes for that.
Very busily releasing those episodes to give some good background for the Acolyte.
Yep. You can also check out Alicia's other feed, Will Shift Us. You want to talk about what you're doing there?
Yeah, so next week we'll be picking up the next batch of Beacon 23 Season 2 episodes. So we'll be covering episodes 4 through 6. So things are taking a very interesting turn in the season. So curious to see what happens in 6 and break that all down.
Yeah. Yeah. Rings and Rituals, still going strong. Marilyn, what you got next?
Oh, yeah. Well, what Sarah and I have got next is only 2 more episodes to record. So
that's
kind of a surprise. And then there's a guest episode with you where we talk about music, which we'll have to sort out exactly how to get that all set up and ready to drop. It's being a fun ride. We had a huge amount of feedback on our most recent recorded episodes. So keep it coming, folks. We're having a lot of fun.
Very cool. I love Rings and Rituals. I've been listening religiously.
Oh, thank you, John. I really
ritually, one might say.
It's become a new ritual for you?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Every Wednesday. Every other Wednesday, rather.
And thus rituals are born.
Radioactive Ramblings, a Fallout podcast, is no longer a Fallout podcast and is now doing Invincible Season 2. They've done the first 4 episodes of the season. They'll be back with a podcast wrapping up the season. And they're going to be doing The Boys coming up. So a lot of good stuff on that feed. Check it out. Probably Howard Movie Review. They just did Pulp Fiction. There was also, I don't know if you two have listened, but our Shogun season wrap-up had You Make My Dreams Come True as one of the sounds for the montage of what's gonna happen next to the characters. And that was still loaded up in Zencastr when they recorded their Pulp Fiction review. So they riffed on it for like 2 minutes. You got to listen. It's very funny. Just listen to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's in my playlist too.
And they're going to have a re-release of the Dune 2 conversation, which I think you were on, Alicia.
Yes.
So very exciting. Yeah. Then they'll be back with their season, Felonies and Fugazis, to talk about all the fun crime-themed drama. Go ahead.
I have to throw out one more one-shot that's coming up, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. This is my little baby that I really wanted to cover. So if anyone has any thoughts about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes or the Planet of the Apes whole series, including the one back in the 70s, please send us an email.
And now that you're a full lorehound, nobody can stop you.
There you go. I really hope that David and I are going to get our act together and do our one shot on Dick Turpin, because it really deserves to be held up to a wider audience.
Yeah. I really need to watch that. And if you guys do the one shot, then that helps me move it up the list.
Okay, David, you heard it here first. Let's get this thing on the road.
Are you listening, David? All right. you're still new to it, Alicia. So why don't you do our Patreon and Supercast shout outs as well as our Discord shout outs?
Okay. Okay. So let me see if I do it a little more smoothly this time. So thank you, our Discord server boosters, Opus and the Machine, Gnarls, Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, and Doove71. And thank you, as always, to our lore masters. Without you, none of this would be possible. And that is Sam Martian, Michael G., Michelle E., David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Peter OH, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Doove71, Brian8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Eric F., Matthew M., Sarah M., DJ Miwa, Andra B., Kwong Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T., Alex V., Aaron T., Sub-Zero, Aaron K., Dali V21, Mothership 61, our newest lore master, thank you, and Gnarls, and of course, always last, always least, just kidding, only about his Pink Floyd opinions, Adrienne.
Thank you, thank you. What a marvelous host.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being a Patreon or Supercast supporter, where you can get early and ad-free episodes of all of our podcasts for just $3 a month and higher if you want shout-outs and things like that. You can also get our House of the Dragon Season 2 Pass, where you'll get ad-free episodes of all of that, plus our show guide. Plenty of great benefits over there, including Second Breakfast, with which Alicia will now be on with me and David. So,
yay!
Very exciting. All right, everyone. May the Force be with you.
And also with you.
Always.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. And connect with us on Twitter at @thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.